Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 23rd of November, recording at 7:36 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, that's earlier than I usually record, but Wall Street had half a day in here today due to the extended Thanksgiving break. Now, let's first have a quick review of the week, and it's been a very interesting one in my opinion. First, stock markets have done really quite well, and that's against the background of a considerable level of pessimism, predictably in line with the extent of the correction that we saw, which accelerated somewhat following President Obama's election victory. I don't think that was an across-the-board thumb down that the president was reelected, but what it did mean was that a number of U.S. and a number of, I should say, U.S. Democrats and particularly Republicans with large equity portfolios suddenly realized that they should cash in some of their gains this year, and the gains have been good this year, with the S&P up currently 12%. And so that's exactly what they did. And I have described that every single day, I think, as selling taking place in November that would have taken place at some point in the new year, but it was brought forward, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if we won't see those same investors buying back into the markets, both before year end and afterwards, because if the momentum is upwards, and it seems to be, those people won't be wanting to miss out on a further rally. Okay. In here today, which is quite interesting, as I say, a strong week generally, but we in Asia, we had two things that I felt were particularly relevant. One is on China. A lot of people are watching China, and we had on Wednesday that upside key day reversal. And I was quite encouraged by that, but I wanted follow through. And on Thursday, about half the gain was given up. So that was a disappointment. But today, China was firmer, recovering most of Thursday's downward move. And therefore, the key low is still holding. And if we get some upside follow through next week, and that would not surprise me, then that will really look quite good and provide further evidence that China is indeed in an overall bottoming out and support building phase prior to one of its more significant recoveries. Now, the other thing that happened in Asia that I thought was quite significant was Taiwan has been a serial underperformer, partly because of a sort of, what would you describe it as? As much of an emotional as economic tie to China. And at any rate, the Taiwanese market leapt 3% in here today. That's a big upward dynamic, and that suggests that the recent lows are going to hold, and that a further recovery is going to follow. Now, moving on to Europe, the European markets were all steady in here today. Best gain looks like Amsterdam, up 1.16%. This is really a commendable performance here overall. And I have pointed out earlier in the week that the two important general indices, the SX5E, that's the major stock markets in Europe, and also the SX70, the banks index, Both of those have been recovering within ranges, and so that looks like they are consolidating gains near the upper side of their rally gains, albeit rallies from a very, very low level. But that low level probably marked the bottom of the bear market for those indices. And they're holding between 4/5 to a quarter of the early rally gains, the rally gains off those lows. And that would suggest that we're going to get another run as we go into the new year. And that would fit in line with the general overall view that that Europe is not quite the crisis meltdown situation that people felt they felt that it was. Obviously, the problems are enormous, not least where the actual growth is going to come from, but the ECB, led by Mario Draghi, has been putting together what seems to be a reasonably sensible safety net underneath the market in these economies, and that Europe is working more like a European Union rather than the European disunion. So that's good news. We've seen this firmer overall stock market action within Europe. That's a big change in terms of the way the continent was viewed over the 2 previous years. Now, elsewhere, the U.S. market had solid gains here today, up looks like just over 1.3% for the Dow, the S&P, and the Nasdaq. And this has been, I think, a pretty much a consecutive day gain, and it was exactly a week ago on Friday last week that we saw the U.S. stock market bottom, and it's seen some very good upward dynamics, moving up possibly even faster than it moved down following the President Obama election. Now, it's clearly the biggest rally since we saw the peak a couple of months ago, and the further this rally continues, the more probable it becomes, and I think it's now quite probable that the low will not actually be tested. Last week's low will not be tested. Now, it's a little bit early to be strong on that viewpoint. The thing about some of these spike lows is that you're only sure that they're, well, you know that you perhaps see an important low when we get an acceleration downwards and then start to get some upward dynamics. But is it going to be retested? Are we going to get ranging near the bottom, or possibly even somewhat lower levels? Or is it going to move back upwards fairly quickly? Well, it's been moving back upwards fairly quickly, and so I would give that hypothesis the benefit of the doubt overall. Now, looking elsewhere in the Americas region, Canada quietly steady. Mexico down a little bit here today, but Brazil quite strong. And looking at long-dated government bond prices, these have eased on the week generally, and that shouldn't surprise us too much because they often take their cue from stock markets. I'll have more to say on this in a moment because there's the issue of the bond bubble that I do want to discuss. Now, just quickly reviewing through the various different sectors, the US dollar has weakened this week for the most part. I think probably the only currency that it's definitely outperformed here of any consequence is the Japanese yen. And the precious metals have been steady pretty well all week and were very strong today. And as I well know, the markets are closed, so it's not as I speak, but we've got palladium up over $15. That's been one of the leaders in the precious metal sector. Silver, also a leader. That's up a big 78 cents, over 78 cents here today to 34.22. Gold, also firm, up to 17.53. That's up $23.50. And the previous laggard, platinum, good move to the upside here today, up $38 to 16.22. More on that in a moment because I'm very bullish of the precious metal sector overall. Industrial metals also have been recovering, although not always to the same extent as precious metals. And I think those are the major highlights. Less going on in the soft commodities, but at least we've seen some easing in that grain and bean complex, and that's very good news to have those prices somewhat lower. Okay, so what do we make of it all? What's the big picture outlook likely to be? Well, overall, we know that sentiment has been quite bearish. You've probably been inundated with a number of bearish reports. Well, I certainly have. And I regard those as a contrary indicator. And I actually feel that we're in a bit of a sweet spot. That may seem like a quite a extreme comment to make here, but let's look at the factors that seem to be important. There's a good chance that China's market is bottoming. That's very important for the Asian region in particular, but it's important globally, being the world's second largest stock market overall. It would be very important for industrial metals and indeed many industrial commodities, although not oil. I think the oil situation is one of, despite all the eruptions in the Middle East that we are seeing, and this has been a predictable trend. It's one that we've long believed in. That first we've got the subsidized development of all the renewables. Our energy bills are all going up as a consequence of that, but it is increasing the various different sources of energy. We have the shale factor, which is huge. It's mainly huge in the United States right now, which has a big edge, and particularly regarding natural gas because of shale oil. And that is going to continue to spread. This technology will continue to spread to other countries, and inevitably, the more it's used, the generally the more reliable it tends to become in terms of risks, and so that's a positive development. There are always risks in the energy field, but they look at least containable. So it's an interesting situation. While we have, excuse me, all this quantitative easing going on, that's a lot of money being thrown at these economies, and a proportion of that is shifting into markets. And the main beneficiaries of that have been stock markets, but bonds have also benefited from it. So have commodities, and increasingly, I think we'll see precious metals benefiting from all that liquidity. So that's a positive development generally. And if the oil price, as I've been mentioning this week, if it's really moving sideways, let alone downwards, as this new supply tends to come on stream, and the slow growth generally within the economy has cut the demand for crude oil. But as long as oil is not spiking upwards, and it's not, then that's positive for the global economy as well. So there are a lot of different factors in here which are making the overall international investment scene look less perilous than it did previously. Now, you might think, well, less perilous, that isn't very reassuring, but that's maximum reassuring, really, or close to it. Because if we said everything looked fantastic, we would know that we were in what was almost certainly an overheating global economy. The oil price would be pressing higher, and central banks would be getting ready or in the process of actually removing the punch bowl. So, too much good news is a sell signal, and too much bad news is a buy signal overall. So, what are going to be the highlights over the medium term here? Well, precious metals, I'm relieved to say, are performing very much in line with our longer-term view, and that is that we are now in the latter stages of this lengthy pause, and the shift has moved from one of distribution within the precious metals to one of accumulation. So the main surprises will be to the upside from here onwards. And following what has, on average, in recent years, well, really, I'm talking about the last decade, really, we have seen at least three lengthy pauses, which have averaged about 21 months. And we're currently well into the 15th month of this pause. And on that time frame, and given the chart action that we've actually seen, I would not be surprised to see precious metals push higher for the remainder of the year. And that's a forecast that I've had for a while now. I think that we're set for some really strong gains in the precious metal sector next year. Now, again, a quick why might we be seeing that? Well, first, because of this seasonal cyclical corrective phase that we've actually seen. Precious metals get these long pauses, these sort of 20-month consolidations, first profit taking, and then the buildup of support once again. These occur following surges to the upside when the overall advance becomes overextended. So we are in the latter stages of this lengthy medium-term correction consolidation, and the support that's been built in recent months and is still being built is quite likely, in my opinion, and will certainly have the technical potential to support significantly higher precious metal prices in the new year. So I expect these precious metals to be higher at year end, and I expect them to be particularly strong, probably most of that coming in the first 6 months of 2013, but it may well last longer than that. Now, I'll say, as I mentioned yesterday in the actual copy, that if these patterns start to deteriorate, well, then all bets are off. I'm not going to burn for the faith on this, but so far, and touch wood, it's doing pretty much What one would hope with an overall bullish view that I've just described. And therefore, I regard this as a particularly important opportunity for investors. If you agree, have a look at the charts, and I would really strongly recommend, if you agree, that you have some exposure here to the four precious metals. Or if you're just going to go for one, go for gold. Or if you want the high beta volatile one, go for silver. I happen to have, I'm talking my book, of course, but it's a sign of my enthusiasm. I'm holding positions in all four of the precious metals, and if they continue to perform in the way they are, and if they fulfill some of my expectations here, I will be leveraging those positions upwards. So I really do feel that this is a major, major opportunity. They will stand to benefit from the quantitative easing while it lasts. The low interest rates that we have around the globe are favorable for precious metals, and there isn't enough of a build-up of inflation here to yet to cause central banks to start reversing their policies. That may come at some point next year. We'll see. But in the meantime, I think this environment right now is about as good as it gets for precious metals, and I think it's going to stay that way really for a good many months now. So I think this is one of the major opportunities. I'm sure you have already picked up that message from me, and I won't apologize for repeating my view on that. Because I think one of the challenges for us as investors is always to try to pick out what are going to be the hot performing sectors here overall. And good candidates are the precious metals. Okay, enough said. Industrial metals likely to recover, certainly if China recovers. If China disappoints and if it's still hanging around at the same level, same low level a year from now, then the precious metals will almost certainly certainly disappoint. And but if China is recovering, and I suspect it is, although it's been a long time coming, hasn't it? Then I think we'll see the interest in the precious metal sector continue to improve, both real demand and also speculative demand in that sector, which is reasonably inexpensive here right now. Now, let's move on to the bond markets, particularly government bonds, but also a number of the corporate bonds. This is the area that concerns me the most. It hasn't been doing anything wrong in terms of price performance here to date. But let's try to put it in perspective. We've got a bull market that's about 30 years old. The juiciest part of that bull market has come in the last few years as a consequence of the QE, the quantitative easing, and all the buying of those bonds that has been coming from various central banks. And all the major ones are involved in this now, as you know. So we're seeing more quantitative easing right now than we've been seeing in the earlier years. So the situation that you have at a time when the United States, the UK, the European Union, Japan, when they've needed to sell more bonds than just about ever before. The huge buyer has been their respective central banks, and that has forced interest rates lower. people who are long in those bond markets, and my hat's off to them, they're doing very well. But my concern, and I've seen this before as of many on many occasions, as of all veteran subscribers, that this is the one full-on bubble in the global economy today. In my opinion, it's the only bubble of any real consequence, and I think it is of real consequence because of all this quantitative easing. That is beyond precedent, and therefore I think that it's likely to end as these big bulls inevitably do. It'll unravel a lot more quickly than it's pushed up to current levels, and an awful lot of people are going to get hurt, and I don't want that to be our subscribers and friends. So where are we at this particular stage of the cycle? Well, the central banks are still buying the bonds, so that may keep the whole game intact for at least a few more months. And however, at this stage of a bubble cycle, I think the risks are so high that I would be very careful in terms of my positions in that market. And I know a number of you are invested in various different bond instruments and also in bond funds. And I would just say, decide what would be an unacceptable downward reaction for you, or put it another way, decide at what point you would want to say, right, I'm not going to allow any more profit erosion than that. I'll stay in as long as the game is good, but once I see profit erosion beyond a certain percentage, I want to be out, and use trailing stops to that effect. And I think that would be a wise choice overall. Now, I also feel that when this bond bubble does burst, there'll be collateral damage. And exactly which markets that will hit and how people will react is very hard to predict at this stage. And I wouldn't predict anything in terms of precise timing with any form of conviction, because it's not necessarily going to be rational. In that once the bond bubble does start to burst, and incidentally it will burst if they are successful in preventing a long Japanese style type of deflation, and I think they will be successful in that. But therefore the irony is that the more successful, and I'll put inverted commas on either side of that, that the central banks are with QE. And I think, just if I pause for a moment and just to define what I mean by that success, which I've got quotation marks around, it means that they will have prevented the much sharper but probably shorter downward economic cycle that we would have seen without all the quantitative easing. But the long term, now that may be comforting, and no doubt it is for many of us. That would have been quite a traumatic meltdown for a year or two. But the probable consequence of all the QE is that we get the shallower setback, significant though it has been, and we get a slower rate of recovery, of economic recovery going forward, and we get a higher rate of inflation overall. I don't want to go on too much on this subject because there's so much to cover overall, but that's my outline overall in terms of how this will actually play out. But my immediate concern, and I think this is the important point, is that when we do start to see evidence that the bond bubble has burst, and that's usually not too difficult to see as it's occurring. The only people who don't see it are the people who are so in love with the bull market that they can't let it go or can't believe that it's actually going to end, and they double down on their mistake of staying in too long by buying bonds as they're coming off, and so they establish their largest positions just as the whole thing is starting to unravel. I certainly hope that doesn't happen to you or to anyone you know. Now, that sell-off, as I say, will cause some collateral damage, and therefore, I think when we do start to see evidence that the bond bubble is bursting, and it may be, it may be a good many months away. It's impossible to tell at this stage, but we'll be following this every day, of course. I will want to be well protected, and I will want to certainly reduce my exposure to other markets, including precious metals, because I don't know how they will react. It'll depend on what else has taken place, where they are in their cycle as the bond market starts to unravel. In other words, the move could be bullish of them if bullish for them if it were to occur sooner rather than later. But if it occurs a couple of years from now, precious metals might be quite overextended, and they would be hit hard in all probability. So we'll just have to wait and see, but we'll be watching this situation at Fuller Money, and I trust that you will also be watching this situation yourselves. What else to mention here? I think on commodities, I covered energy, feeling that we were in not exactly a sweet spot, but not an unfavorable spot here right now. Energy prices ranging overall. I remain optimistic on a long-term basis that the shale and gas production, shale oil and shale gas production, will be a boon for the energy industry in that sense that we will be moving as this decade progresses increasingly from what has been a very tight and dangerous and expensive environment for energy into one where prices in real terms, that is inflation-adjusted terms at any rate, will be lower overall. And that will be good for the global economy in the next decade, all other things being equal. So it's an interesting time, interesting outlook, and I don't want to go on too long in this audio, so I'll bring it to a close and just say have a fantastic weekend, and all of these themes will continue to be reviewed by us. All the best.